Suppose somebody asks me the color of this tablecloth, say blue, what's so special about it? But before I can tell the color of the tablecloth, many factors have to be there. My eyes have to be, you know, proper. I don't have a cataract or some vision problems. I shouldn't be colorblind. Men usually are. They can't tell the difference between blue and black. So I shouldn't be colorblind. There should be enough light. If it's a dark room, obviously I cannot tell you the color. Then in childhood, my mother should have told me this is blue, this is yellow, this is green. So there should be no obstruction in front of my eyes. So all these factors have to be there before I can tell that the color of the tablecloth is blue. Similarly, just as the knowledge of the tablecloth is blue needs so many other factors, similarly, the knowledge of Vedanta, the knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita, the path of Jnana Yoga, needs previous introduction, needs a previous background. Arjuna was deluded because in the second chapter he had heard Krishna praise the path of knowledge and says the path of knowledge is superior to the path of action. And so Arjuna feels, then why can't I straight go to the path of knowledge? Why do I tat kim karmani ghore mam niyojayasi keshava? So Arjuna starts the third chapter by saying that jayasi chet karma naste mata buddhir janardana. If you say that the path of knowledge is the superior to the path of action, then why are you promoting me? Why are you pushing me in this horrible path of action, in the path of war? And the point is that to get knowledge, you need to have the correct pramana. Like, for example, coming back to the tablecloth example, if you ask me the color of the tablecloth, I have to see it with my eyes. I cannot say I'll touch and tell you the color, or I'll taste the tablecloth and tell you the color. So the right pramana for color is eyes. So similarly, the right pramana for this knowledge of who I am and what is my purpose in life is the Bhagavad Gita, the Upanishads, the scriptures. So that's what the message of the third chapter is, that Bhagavan tells Arjuna there are not two paths. See, we think there are two paths, the path of knowledge and the path of action. So, but in the last few verses that we had covered, Bhagavan says that they are sequential, they follow each other, they are connected. So through the path of action, you purify your mind, through the path of karma yoga, the path of service, and then once your mind is purified, then it is ready for the path of knowledge. So it is a two-stage path. It is not two separate paths, and that's where Arjuna's delusion was. Maybe some of you have not been attending the Sunday class. I think most of them are, but I'll just briefly summarize what we have covered in the first two chapters, and then we'll start the third chapter. I already covered the first few shlokas of the third chapter. But in the first chapter, as we know, the war was about to begin. There was the side of the Adharma, the wrong, which was the Kauravas, and the Dharma, which was Arjuna and the Pandavas. And Arjuna asks Bhagavan Sri Krishna to put his chariot in front of the Kaurava forces so I may see who I have to face. And somebody asked in the last class, why didn't Bhagavan put his chariot in front of Duryodhana? Why did he put it in front of Bhishma and Drona? Because if he had put it in front of Duryodhana, Arjuna had so much anger in him, the war would have started and we would have never had this beautiful 18 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. But more importantly, Bhagavan wanted him to understand the right reason why. So it's not just war for the sake of war, and he's not fighting against Arjuna, Duryodhana, or against Karna, or against the Kauravas, but he's representing dharma against adharma, righteousness against unrighteousness. And in the second chapter, Bhagavan starts his teaching first at the highest level, that there is only one consciousness, Brahman, the Atman, the soul, what we call as Om, which pervades everything, and you, me, the kings, we are all that. And so none of us will ever perish. There was never a time when you and I were not there, and these kings, we are here, and there is never a time we will not be there in the future. We are all that, Atman, the Self, which is indestructible. Nahanyati hanyamane sharire. Even when the body perishes, the Atma, the soul, the consciousness does not perish. And that is your true nature. That is what we call Om. So he distinguished between real and unreal. What is right and what is wrong, which will come in the second section. The first section is that there is real Atma, the consciousness. And then this world we see is a projection upon that. Then from there, he goes to the path of karma. Or karma. Actually, then he tells him what is his duty. As a kshatriya, it is his duty to fight for the right cause when he is faced with the wrong. So there he tells him what is his duty, what he should not do. And having taught the path of knowledge, Bhagavan in the second chapter goes to the very famous shloka, karmanye vadika raste ma phaleshu kadachan, ma karma phala hetur buhu mate sangostva karmani. So he says your duty is to do karma and do not worry about the result. The result will take care of itself. Do what is right, do what is karma yoga, and do not succumb to inaction. That's what Arjuna wanted to do. He wanted to run away to the forest to meditate, and he said, for you, that is akarmani, that is not what should be done. After having explained the path of karma yoga, Arjuna asks a very beautiful question. Sthita pragnasya ka bhasha, samadhistasya keshava, sthitadi kim bravashet, kim asit vrajet kim. He had heard about this man of wisdom, what they call as sthita pragna. So how does such a person conduct himself in the world? How does he deal with situations? How does he walk, talk? So Bhagavan does the in the very famous section of the second chapter called Sthita Prajna Lakshanani, talks about the indications of this man of wisdom. I won't attempt to go into that because that itself takes several hours. But briefly, he says that such a person remains detached. Prajahati yada kama sarvan parth manogatan atman yev atmana tushtah sthita pragnasya tadochate. So he says a wise person can withdraw from the sense objects, not let them affect him. Why? Atman yev atmana tushtah. He is content within himself. He has stationed himself within his own self, the Lord within, and so the world objects cannot affect such an individual. And he ends by saying that once established in this wisdom, na mohyati, he says this wise person, once he understands that I am that self, then even at the time of death, brahma nirvanam richati, he reaches the highest state. So this, in very, very brief, in about 5 minute summary of the first and second chapters. And as I said, the third chapter starts with Arjuna's question about two paths. And Bhagavan tells us that there are not two paths, but there is only one path. And that is path of action followed by path of knowledge. There may be a few people who may be so evolved that they could directly go to the path of knowledge, like Brahman Maharishi, for example. But for most of us, is the path of action. Gurudev calls them as active and contemplative individuals. For the active individuals, like us, who are working in the world, the path of karma yoga. And for the contemplative, the introverted, is the path of jnana yoga. So he says, sankhya yogena sankhya nam, karma yogena yoginam. So that was the essence of what we have covered so far. So today we'll do verse number 5, chapter 3. Chapter 3 is the path of karma yoga.
Nahi kaschit chanamapi jatu tishthatya karma krita कार्यते ह्यवशक कर्मा कार्यते sarvah prakriti jair gunaihi.
So he says, nahi kaschit kshanamapi. Kaschit, nobody, nahi, nobody, kshanamapi, even a moment, jatu means indeed, tishthati akarmakrit. Tishthati means stays, akarmakrit means without doing any actions. So nobody can stay even a moment without doing any action. So we say, how about sleep? We'll talk about that also. Jatu tishtati karma krit. And why do we act? Karyate karma. We do actions avasha. He means indeed. Avasha means without, I mean compelled to act. Even though we don't wish to act, we are pushed to act. Why? Sarva. All of us. All of us. Why? Prakriti jair gunaihi. Gunas born out of prakriti. So, there is nobody who can stay without action because everyone is compelled to act by his prakriti. So, what is prakriti? Prakriti we understand as nature. But there are two aspects to nature. One is the outer prakriti. So, what is this world? Everything that we see, hear, smell, taste, touch, think, feel outside, that is all prakriti. And people are compelled to act because of prakriti, like a mother gets up at night to feed her child, to take care of her child, or a father goes to work to earn. So it's all for the outer world. So that compels us to act. I have to go out and do things for my children, for my family, for my society. And there is the inner prakriti, the mind and intellect and the vasanas, which propel me to act. So even though outside I may not have any desire, but inside there is some desire, some vasana, some tendency, which compels me to act. Maybe it may compel me to go get a bottle, or it may compel me to pick up a tennis racket, or it may compel me to go out and build, you know, home for humanity. So the actions I do could be either compelled by outer prakriti or inner prakriti. And Arjuna felt that if he does not fight, if he runs away from the battle because the battle is evil, then he will sit peacefully in the Himalayas or in the forest and do nothing. That's what in the fourth verse he talked about, Naishkarmya Siddhi, actionlessness. Where Bhagavan says actionlessness does not happen without desirelessness. Even though I am sitting and doing nothing, like, you know, like you are all sitting, but you are listening and the mind is active. Maybe you say, oh, what he says doesn't make any sense. Or maybe it is very useful. You know, again, the mind is still working. Yes, 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 it makes sense. So even though I am sitting, the mind consumes a lot more energy than we think. If we look at it nowadays, how many of us go out and lift bricks or dig ditches or make a building or lift heavy loads? No. We all just come home and say, oh, I'm exhausted. You know, what did you do? I sat in front of a computer in an air-conditioned office for 8 hours. And I'm exhausted. Why are you exhausted? Because the mind is active. The mind is running. And the mind is the source of problems. The mind is the source of fatigue. And so the mind, even though I'm sitting and doing nothing, the mind is running furiously. Then we say, how about in deep sleep? At least in deep sleep, we don't do anything. No, you do. Because your digestive system is going on. Your, you know, bone marrow is making. The heart is beating, the lungs are moving, and all those activities are going on to maintain the body. And people say, on the weekend, I will sleep in. How long will you sleep? 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, noon? Then you have to get up. Hunger will wake you up, thirst will wake you up, you know, restroom activities. So you cannot sleep forever. So the point is that actions go on constantly. Our body is acting constantly. The mind, the physiology is acting. So to think, for Arjuna to think that by going to the forest, I will be doing nothing and I will be relaxing, that itself is fallacy. Other thing people think that spirituality means passive. You know, person who is spiritual, he does nothing. He just sits all day and meditates. But you only have to look at the life of Pujya Gurudev Swami Chinmayanandaji, who even till his last breath from 1950 to 1993 worked constantly from 4 a.m. till often till midnight. And look at Bhagavan Shankaracharya ji, how much he accomplished in his short 32 years. All traveled all over the India, established this knowledge of Vedanta. So to think that the life of spirituality is a life of inactivity or passivity is a wrong thinking, and that's what Bhagavan tries to tell him. And even the Mahatmas sitting in the Himalayas, you might say, okay, they are meditating, but even they have to get up and wash themselves, go to the river, look for food. But the difference between them and us is that they are focused. Their mind is focused on the higher goal. That is, if they are truly there for the right reason. And you and I, our mind is dissipated. So that is the essence of verse number 5. That actions will go on no matter what we think. So we can never be actionless. And that is verse number 5.